Republican leader Mitch McConnell said,
"Blog Talk Radio.
U.S. forces from Afghanistan is a grave mistake." White House COVID coordinator Jeff Zients says the government was ready for unexpected events in the fight against the coronavirus, including the pause in the distribution of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
I want to be clear that this announcement will not have a significant impact on our vaccination program.
Zients says there are plenty of vaccine supplies available for Moderna and Pfizer. Top health officials recommended J&J pause due to concerns about some very rare blood clots. Texas Republican Congressman Kevin Brady is retiring after serving in the House for more than 20 years. Brady has represented Texas's 8th congressional district since 1997. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
We all make promises, big and small.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I do solemnly swear
to help you when you're in need.
To be considerate and caring. To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partners.
Child, parent, neighbor. One of our most important commitments is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting MakeTheConnection.net.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at our alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, another gorgeous and sunny day we have in store for us. High temperatures around 62, 63 degrees today. Clear skies and temperatures dropping down about 20 degrees down to about 43 for tonight. Clear skies through the overnight. More sunshine expected for Thursday. High temperatures topping out in the high 60s, 68, 69 in many areas. Thursday night again clear with temperatures dropping down to about 46. Oh, look at that. Friday, more sunshine again and highs around 74. I'm loving these last few days.
Time is funny. Sometimes it seems fast and other times slow. When it comes to time slots remaining on Alternative Talk 1150, time is running out. In fact, there are just a few primetime slots available. So if you want to host your own radio program, the time to call 425-653-1150 is right now. Nope, no time for excuses. Dial 425-653-1150 to find out how affordable it can be to host a radio show. Alternative Talk, we have an opportunity waiting just for you.
We are the physicians, the nurses, the hospital and health system leaders. All we ask of you is to take three simple steps proven to stop the spread of COVID. Wear a cloth face mask, maintain social distance, and wash your hands. Scientific evidence must shape our decisions, dictate our actions, and protect our health. We are not powerless. Together, we will defeat COVID. This has been a message from the American Hospital Association, the American Medical Association, and the American Nurses Association.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Thank you, Nick Johnson, for creating that music for us, like, I don't even know how long ago. I want to thank all of you for tuning us in and turning us on. We've got a great lineup here today. Hello, Benny. Hello, Jacob. How you both be, my producers today?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Pat.
Yeah. You know, Benny, you've heard me talk about, and maybe Jacob a little bit, but I've always been fascinated with, how should I call them? Ancient, absolutely ancient historical messaging. And how did that even happen? And here's a short story to tell you about my interest and my guest today. Sometimes we're drawn to things in life and we don't really know why. We don't. It kind of doesn't make sense on paper. things just, you know, maybe as a kid somebody points to you and says, hey, Robert, you're going to be that person. You're going to be that one. That's you. Or Benny, you're going to be that. You're going to be that. But here was a clue for me, and that's what today's show is about, Forgotten Civilizations, New Discoveries in the Solar-Induced Dark Age with Dr. Robert M. Schock. Now, here's why I find this interesting. And when Linda presented the book to me, I said, I've got to talk to him. And I just hope I do justice to the discoveries and the questions and having us think, in a sense, from a common sense perspective in a lot of ways. But here's the thing. I'm in a business program in Fairleigh Dickinson in New Jersey. And I had to take an elective, and I picked geology. It is absolutely not what a business person picks. You just don't do it. You don't pick geology when they say, you want to take an elective. You just go get something else over here. But you don't pick geology. And I walk into the geology classroom, fantastically amazing. I was like a kid in a candy store, and I knew nothing about it. So here's a really long story, really short. The first thing out of the professor's mouth was, how many of you want to be geology majors? So everybody except like five of us. How many of you are here because somebody told you you had to be here? So we all raise our hands. Mistake number one, if somebody asked you a question in college, are you here because somebody made you be here? Do not answer yes. That is not good. But here's what happened to me. It was the hardest class I had ever taken. It was the most interesting course I had ever taken. And if my business would have paid for me to continue to study, I would have done it throughout my entire undergraduate. But they didn't. But here's what I love about this. We go on a field trip. And I'm just loving this. I am like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. We're looking at fossils. We're looking at rock formations. We're looking at minerals. We're looking at all of these things. And I'm not different than probably you all out there that has been fascinated by what we don't fully understand but intuitively want to know more about. That's what I love about Robert today joining me. So, Professor says, you ready? Robert, wait for it.
I'm here.
Wait for it. The person in the class, the first person, two teachers, they compete against each other each year for like a case of champagne. So the student that finds pyrite first in each class gets an automatic A. And the teacher gets a case of something. I don't even know what it was. Guess who finds the pyrite within 10 minutes of a field trip?
I would guess you.
You had to know that from the faculty's perspective, he couldn't have been happier. But at the same time, he was shocked. And I've often thought about this. And, you know, as I was reading your book and I was thinking about you and your journey, I got to ask you with this question coming out of the gate. You know, you're a tenured faculty member at Boston University. I took one course there when I moved up there. You have a doctorate in geology. You have written books about one of my favorite fascinations. Some people call it the Sphinx. Some people call it other things. But as time goes on, you've studied, you've researched ancient civilizations. I got to ask you, what was your pyrite moment? What was that moment for you where you popped up and say, hey, I'm going to be this for the rest of my life?
Well, that's very funny because I'm not sure I've said I'm going to be this for the rest of my life quite yet. When it comes right down to it, but I will tying in with what you were just talking about, I was not a geology major for my first few weeks in college, I was going to be an art history major. I loved art. I still love art. I love art history. I was actually going to major in art history with a focus on late antiquity at that time. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Of course, these things changed very, very quickly. And I had to take a science elective. So what did I do? I took geology. I didn't just take geology, but this was me. I took the major's introductory geology course because I figured if I was going to take something, I might as well take the real thing, not the watered-down, dilute version. And I fell in love with geology, and I can tell you why I fell in love with geology, because not all the questions were answered.
Right.
And I had a wonderful faculty member who, from day one, intro geology course, was very explicit. When he didn't really know something, he said he didn't really understand how these rocks form, et cetera. It wasn't his ignorance. It's because no one understood. And I remember one time, I have to say this, where he was going on and on about how he really didn't understand how this certain set of metamorphic rocks were formed, and it could be this or it could be that. And he almost was like, if he didn't know what was going on, that this person, well, does he really know what he's talking about? He absolutely knew what he was talking about, because then when you went home and read the assigned chapter in the textbook, guess who the expert on those rocks was? It was him. He was talking about one of his fields of expertise that he was acknowledged internationally, for in the geological community. So I just found that fascinating, that there was more to learn, that this was a subject where people could actually admit we don't know everything there is to know. Because in so many introductory courses, they're taught as if all the answers are there. You just memorize the dogma and that's it. So I think that really had a great influence on me, more than anything else, that there are so many things we don't know.
You know what I'm fascinated by? Thank you so much for that, Robert. For those of you out there, if you're just tuning in, I am so thrilled to have Dr. Robert Schock joining me here today. You know, we're talking about forgotten civilizations, but we're also talking about another fascination of mine. There's so many and so little. I know so little about them. That's why anytime I get to have a conversation with you, Robert, I am just like a kid in a candy store. But here's another intuitive thing I want to talk about. There are many people, if you ask them passing on the street, do you think the sun is stable or not stable? I'm just saying, try this. It is phenomenal. I did this about 10 years ago, way back. And I don't know why I did it. Some movie came out, and I don't know. But if you ask people that question, at least when I asked them, their answer was so clear. Unstable. We think it's unstable. And yet, general idea, or at least what I'm picking up, is in the sciences that we're now just starting to gather information that says not as stable as we thought. And this is a body of work for you because solar-induced dark age, and I want to talk with you about this, but what has been your journey in not just understanding the activity of the sun, but what led you down the pathway to say, wait a minute, solar outburst, electrical plasma, down the pathway to say there's more here?
Well, this really goes back to my early work. My early work started out with the Sphinx, I think as maybe you know and many people know, and the redating of the Sphinx to ultimately, I kept pushing it back based on more and more data, ultimately back to the end of the last ice age. And what I found, and this ties in with the solar-induced dark age, is that there was what I call a cycle of civilization. There was true civilization back at the end of the last ice age. The ice age ended. We know this very specifically now, geologically, from sediment cores, ice cores, et cetera. It ended 9700 BC. So just think in terms of about 12,000 years ago. And what brought that down? It literally happened overnight. As far as we can tell, it may literally have been happened overnight. We can pinpoint to within a few weeks, but that's just because of a lack of resolution down to days in the ice cores, in particular from Greenland. So what happened to it? What could bring this about? This was really perplexing. Different people have suggested different catastrophic scenarios. One that's very popular is a comet, but that would not end an ice age. It would actually throw an ice age back colder. All the evidence. There's also not evidence. We can talk about comets later. I've written about comets in previous books. But it was really trying to figure out what could cause the end of the last ice age. That was my initial impetus, and I had been studying the Sphinx. I was studying a site in Turkey known as Göbekli Tepe.
Oh.
Goes back 12,000 years, incredibly sophisticated. I believe they had writing, they had megalithic architecture, all the distinguishing features that scientists, that archaeologists use to recognize true civilization. And to put this into context, because not everyone is into all the academia minutiae, the classic historians, the classic archaeologists do not generally accept that civilization arose before about 4,000 to 3,000 BC. So when we're pushing it back to approximately 10,000 BC, that's 6,000 years earlier. But there is this time gap between the collapse of that early cycle of civilization and the reemergence of civilization 6,000 years later. So that's what Katie is my wife, and I have been calling the solar-induced dark age. So what brought us to the sun? What brought me to the sun? It was another revelation, and this one really was due to Katie, my wife. We had gone to study Göbekli Tepe, this incredibly sophisticated site, which confirmed my earlier work that there was true civilization 12,000 years ago. We went to Easter Island. We were actually married on Easter Island. This is 2010. And something that Easter Island has is the Rongo Rongo script. Now, the Rongo Rongo script looks like these little hieroglyphs, these little dancing characters. And something that I had been looking into but not paid enough attention to was the work of Los Alamos plasma physicists, and plasma is basically ionized gases that can be given off by stars like the sun in what are known as solar outburst coronal mass ejections. And this is Dr. Anthony Perot. And he had found is that when you have these big solar outbursts, and he had been studying this and modeling this in the laboratory, you will see things in the sky, like the aurora borealis, the northern lights or the southern lights, but much more distinctive, much more definitive. It will look like dancing figures in the sky. Sort of think of stick figures or sets of cascading donuts, that type of thing. It will make very distinctive figures in the sky. And he had found that ancient people recorded this as petroglyphs, carvings on rock, what look like to some people scratchings on rock, but around the world, very distinctive. In fact, he's even commented, well, how could they know about this? It took me, you know, took him, not me, Dr. Pratt, it took him these studies in the laboratories with supercomputers, making simulations to figure this out and hear people recording it on rocks in ancient times, thousands and thousands of years earlier. So getting back to Easter Island, we are looking at all the stuff from Easter Island that we can learn about, looking at the Rongo Rongo script, this undeciphered, previously uninterpreted script. And Katie says to me, they look like the petroglyphs that Dr. Perot is studying. And I said, sure enough, it's the same things. It's the same configurations. But what you have with the script, the Rongo Rongo script, is them in sequence as if they were recording what was happening to the sun, one item after another. And that changed everything for me. I said, we've got to look at the sun. We've got to look at the sun as a causal factor. And the more I looked into this, the more I found that, yes, the sun has incredible influence on Earth. It can cause the comings and goings of ice ages once the conditions are right. Otherwise, it can cause earthquakes. I talk about that in the book.
Yep.
All these factors that tie in with the sun. It can cause the torrential rains that weathered the Sphinx that I've been looking at for 30 years now.
Yeah. You know, I want to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about a couple of these things you touched upon. I definitely want to talk about Turkey, but I wanted to get a sense. I can only imagine what it's like for you to be you for a moment. I have this Dr. Shock in the moment of what it's like to be, oh, okay, the Sphinx. Oh, wait a minute. The paw of the Sphinx. Oh, my goodness. A discovery in there. And by the way, I know you're referring to your wife as Katie. It's Catherine, right? I know her as Catherine.
Catherine, you
brilliant know. Photography work and so much more. And contributor to this book, by the way.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. What?
I could not do it without her. Because
you make a great team, and I was reading even more about getting married on Easter Island and how both of you, right, each of you individually is amazing, but when two people come together like that, there's such a greater purpose that they sign on to do together. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. What is it about what you're discovering in a lifetime of discoveries that help us connect the dots? And one last thing I want to say. How is it that something that's falling from the sky yesterday in Florida is making the headlines? How many of these fall from the sky? But what is it about this one that people could see? Why are we now more intrigued about the going-ons of what we don't know in space and the history and the beauty of thousands of years on Earth that calls many of us to ask more questions than answers. But if you're Dr. Robert Shock and you are sitting there and looking at the Sphinx and you are now discovering things that other people had not discovered, what is that like? We're going to come back. We're going to talk about why this approach, or shall I say, this solar-induced dark age, this applying this framework to history is more than groundbreaking. That, and we're going to share some tidbits maybe you don't know. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
Feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on transformationtalkradio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit carrienail.com.
Imagine starting your week off with a teaching, a clearing, and an activation direct from the God consciousness. If you would like to feel more in charge of your week ahead, then I personally invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, for our monthly Soul Sunday non-denominational service at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, online or in person. All donations for this event go to the TLC Initiative Fund to help those in need. Sign up now at TracyLClark.com and let's connect together in the glory realm.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis?
You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune into A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lowe, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's trishlaub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Tune into the show, Heart Change Consciousness, with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Terry Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
What happens when you take two people that have a love, a dedication, and a passion for discovery, and you put them together? What happens when these two people meet and not only get to understand each other, but get to take a wondrous journey together? And, you know, when you mentioned Katie, you know, Catherine is what I'm familiar with. I haven't made it to the place where I can yet call her Katie. But when I think about the connection and what the journey you've taken together, I'm really struck by a number of different things. But I want to talk to you about solar-induced dark age and that framework, because the book takes us on a journey so many different places. I mean, I would need about 3 or 4 hours to really ask you all the questions I want to ask you. But the most important thing is for us to understand what this framework means, not just to its literal meaning, but also the implications for discovery. Tell us about that.
Well, the literal meaning, let's start there, is something we touched on before the break, which is that there was a cycle of civilization. That's my terminology for it. There was high civilization. There was advanced civilization 12,000 years ago before the end of the last ice age, and that was devastated by the solar outburst that brought the last ice age to an end. And I could go into great detail on what was happening there, but I think right now we want to talk about the major framework and the implications.
Yeah.
So this early civilization was devastating. We went into what I call a dark age, a solar-induced dark age. And it's sort of ironic because the sun brings light. The sun is absolutely indispensable for us as humans, for all of life on Earth. But it also has another side. It has a volatile side. And what we're finding now, what I believe is the case based on the astrophysics and analogies with other stars that we can study, is that our sun is a fairly typical star in its class, and it probably goes through periods of disequilibrium is one way to look at it. It has to recalibrate itself, and it takes a couple of thousand years to do that. So you have these periods of a couple of thousand years when it's relatively unstable, and then you have periods in between 8 to 10,000 years when it's relatively stable. So from the end of the last ice age, 9700 BC, up until just recently, it's been relatively stable. It's now going to a pattern of instability once again, but we can come back to that. Let me get back to the solar-induced dark age and implications. So we have about 6,000 years after the end of the last ice age, after the devastation of that early cycle of civilization, dark age, slowly humanity came back. It was actually devastated in many areas. Other places, pockets of humanity survived. So, for instance, we see this in what is modern Anatolia. Pockets survived there because they went underground, to be very straightforward about
yes.
it. We can even map languages from that region, the Indo-European languages going back to the end of the last ice age. So there's lots of data for this. But slowly, humanity reemerged to the point where modern archaeologists refer to civilization having originated, as I mentioned before, between 4,000 and 3,000 BC. But it's not the origin. It's a reemergence. And even the ancient people 5,000 years ago, they knew this. They talked about how there had been an earlier cycle of civilization, what the Egyptians called Zeptepi. Their predecessors, if you would, what they considered the gods, which I interpret that as that was an advanced people. So very much like modern Europe, or when I say modern Europe, the Renaissance after a dark age, after the fall of classical civilization, but a much grander time frame. So our cycle of civilization, as I measure it as a geologist, has lasted about 5,000 years. But we run the risk of doing this all again, that if we do not heed the sun, if we do not pay attention to natural events, particularly solar events, our sun is now ramping up once again. And furthermore, and I want to be very positive about this, but sometimes to be positive, we have to face reality. We have to face the actual facts. And I think that's something that I've tried to do all my career, is to use the actual evidence, face the actual facts. Our sun is not particularly stable, and it's going into a period of real instability now. We've seen this over the last 8,000 years. There's been a half a dozen periods of instability that we can now measure. They were relatively small compared to the end of the last ice age. I want to point out this is really new data since
yeah.
the first edition of my book. When the first edition of my book
yeah.
was doing this blindly, and now we have all this data coming forward that supports what I was saying all along. But we have also boxed ourselves in many ways. We have wonderful technology. Look at what we're doing right now, you and I.
Yeah.
Even a small solar outburst could bring this down if we're
yeah.
not careful about it. And so we should not ignore what's going on with the sun. We should make plans well ahead of time as best we can. And we should also acknowledge, I believe, what is beyond our control. Which is also making plans in a sense of realizing what we can't control. Humanity, and I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, but there's incredible hubris on the part of humanity sometimes. And I think we need to acknowledge our place in the bigger scheme, and this is something we can learn from that ancient cycle of civilization. So I think that this puts, for me, a lot of pieces together, not only why the earlier civilizations come and go in the biggest picture, but also what does the future look like? Where are we leading to? How can we take this information and plan ahead?
You know what I'm struck by, and this is what's fascinating as I'm reading your book, and I'm thinking about how we portray the deities of ancient Egypt. And I think about this. And so when I start to look at timelines and listen to the discoveries and the new discoveries, I think about, and I've often asked myself this question, you know, there have been civilizations that revered the sun, but none, I don't think, quite like Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about the sun god Ra, and as you were speaking, all I could think about was, well, wait a minute. Yeah, there is this side of Ra, and there's this side.
Yes,
there's
yes.
the light side, and then there's the dark side. And as you were speaking about the sun itself, I've often wondered, boy, how did those people know? I mean, there was a knowledge that had to be carried forward to them.
Well, and see, I think one thing we can learn from the ancients, well, talk about the Egyptians, they saw the sun as divine. They saw the sun very much as God, literally God.
Yep.
And this is actually something that we find throughout ancient civilization. And where it's coming from, I believe, is that they actually believed the sun was, in a way, conscious. And I don't use that term loosely, and there's actually evidence, I believe, for that. We're not necessarily talking consciousness the way we think of for humans,
mm-hmm.
but also not talking just totally inanimate random matter, if I could put it that way. So they saw a connection to the divine, and they saw that the sun, if I could now use the consciousness and sort of anthropomorphic metaphor, I'll put it that way, has different personalities.
Totally.
Different periods. The sun can be loving and supportive and brings forth humanity and supports humanity. The sun also has another side when it can ravage humanity. And you see this in the myths of ancient Egypt, I think better expressed than any other ancient tradition that has come down to us, although you see it in other ancient traditions as well. Catherine Ulysses, my wife, Katie and I went to India, for instance. There they revere the sun. The sun is a one manifestation, the physical manifestation of the ultimate God for them. And so, again, they're acknowledging the same thing, the sun and the divine, and how important it is for humanity.
You know, I'm really struck by a number of things, but you talked to some of this in the book, and I kept going back. I went back to a couple of chapters in the book, but I went back, and I want to go back there again. I want to go back to the Hall of Records, the chamber under the Sphinx, and I want to ask you, I know that this is a discovery with geophysicist Thomas DeBakey, and I know you both of you together on that. But I wondered, I don't know when I wondered this, but I wondered how that discovery altered the framework of all the other discoveries that were to come now. And what I'm trying to ask about it is there's a level of importance in that discovery that had it not been found, I just wonder. I wonder.
The chamber under the Sphinx?
Yeah.
The chamber under the Sphinx is... I mean, it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
I'd like to get into it at some point.
Yeah.
It has been something that has been part of my life ever since Becky and I discovered it 30 years ago now, or just over 30 years ago. But it's interesting that I've not always, and maybe I've done this very consciously and purposefully, I've not always put as much emphasis on it in my own life, probably so, as other people have. So let me explain that a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to clear that we were not looking for a chamber under the Sphinx. We found that chamber. Edgar Cayce, for instance, had suggested it would be there. We now have ancient evidence, and this is work that I pursued with my colleague, Dr. Manu Saif, today, that the ancient Egyptians in 5,000 years ago, about 3000 BC, were apparently aware of that chamber. And furthermore, the Sphinx was not a Sphinx at that time.
Right.
It was a lioness. It was a female lion known as Mehit or Mehet that guarded a chamber. Literally, we now have documents from 5,000 years ago that talk about a much more ancient chamber, which I believe they were tying in with Zeptepe, so back to the end of the last ice age, the same time that Plato's talking about Atlantis. So that chamber in some ways is key and core and ties many things together. But getting back to my first comment, I was not looking for a chamber.
Right.
I'm not treasure hunting whatsoever. And I have what I wanted to do with the seismic work was to look at the subsurface weathering, the subsurface mineralogical changes that would give me a handle on the age of the Sphinx, because I want independent evidence for what I was saying based on surface analysis. So I wanted another data set, independent data set, essentially. And it was just by circumstance that we found chambers, and actually there's a collapsed tunnel, et cetera. And that just attracted so much attention, rightfully so, but it's something I metaphorically fell into. No kidding.
I wasn't looking for pyrite either.
Exactly.
Wanted a passing grade from that class. But, for some reason, gold just stuck out to me, or the elliptical. You know, I want to get back to one other thing in this book, and it is the implications of the solar-induced dark age and the implications for connecting the dots to so many other things. Because, you know, we've talked about it in its own realm, what it is. But there are implications to applying the framework, right? And you talk about this in the book, and you connect the dots to, you know, megalithic monuments and traditions. And, you know, it's so fascinating to me. I worked for Bell Labs. I got to have bagels every Friday with Arno Penzias.
Wonderful.
And I was a young kid. So as a young kid, you can imagine the most ridiculous questions you want to ask a gentleman like that, not knowing really who this guy is, like Big Bang, so what? And I remember spending Fridays with him in total awe, and he was so open to us, and he bought the bagels, by the way.
That's great.
And I always remember how he connected the dots, and that's really my question for you. There are a lot of dots that just do not connect.
Yeah,
it seems like you found a way to do that.
I agree, and I think that's a very interesting analogy with the microwave background radiation that he discovered, which then tied things together cosmologically.
Yep.
What is now known as the Big Bang, and I love that analogy, and I feel flattered and honored, because I think in some ways the concept of the solar-induced dark age, the sun has been the modulating factor on cycles of civilization, all of a sudden really brings things together. Why do we have only megalithic, huge megalithic structures surviving from that earlier period? That's all that would survive. Getting to the chamber that we were just talking about, that's another way to try to deposit and allow things to survive. So if we could ever get into that chamber and find its contents, they could actually go back to the earlier cycle civilization. We have a site at Gunung Padang in Java that also has a chamber inside that may contain records. But so what do you do to survive this? You build megalithic structures that will survive. You try to cover over material when you see what's happening. So Göbekli Tepe was purposefully covered to protect it. You built chambers into solid rock to protect your archives. You survived personally by going into first natural caves and then carving into the rock. What do we have in Anatolia and Cappadocia in Turkey, the underground cities? They were not building these underground cities to survive from their enemies. I mean, their enemies would just lock it in and they'd all die and suffocate. Furthermore, yes, and this is a very important point I want to make, yes, many of these structures were used later. They were used during the last 5,000 years.
Yeah.
They were a legacy, I believe, from that earlier cycle of civilization. So the Sphinx, which I've spent so much time studying, there is no doubt that the ancient Egyptians from 5,000 years ago, 3,000 BC on, the dynastic Egyptians, they knew the Sphinx. They worshipped the Sphinx. They restored the Sphinx. They recarved the head of the Sphinx from a lioness to the modern, when I say modern, the 5,000-year-old.
Exactly.
You remember I'm a geologist.
Yeah, I'm totally right there with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the same page of you so much that when people say primitive civilizations, the hair on my neck just stands up because of the very thing you just, and you could probably go on, But how is a civilization primitive when it knows how to cover over a structure, when it knows how to protect information? I mean, where is the primitive nature of that? So the hair on my neck just goes bizarro because it shuts us out to learn something. And I think we better learn some things.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And we better use their example of what they set to say. One thing I want to make this point, maybe I've already made.
Go ahead.
I think something that really distinguishes those classic ancient civilizations from our civilization is their concept of time and their time frame. They did not think in the next 3 years or the next election cycle. They really had a good perspective on the big picture temporally as well as cosmologically. And I think that's something that's very important that we can learn from them.
I totally agree with you. I remember one of the questions that I asked Dr. Kenzias, and gosh, what was I, 17, 18? I don't even know how. I was like in that realm. And I asked him the question, did time stand still? Why did I? Maybe I watched The Time Machine or something that came out. But I asked him that question because I was listening to him and the way he he talked to us in layperson language that we can understand. And what dawned on me was I couldn't comprehend the amount of time he was talking about. So in my mind, it was almost as if time stood still or there was no time. And could we benefit from that, Dr. Schock? And what I mean by that is we live so in the election cycle, the annual cycle, the financial cycle, the tax cycle. I mean, my gosh, we look at ourselves as so minuscule without the impact of what we could have on the future.
Yeah, no, I think we could benefit a lot. And I think this is one of the, weakest points in our society today is that we don't have a concept of any type of long-term, even short-term time frame. Look at all the things that have happened, and I don't want to blame anyone or point to certain things, but we could. Where you have, quote, natural disasters, but they're not natural disasters at all from a geologic point of view. There are things that happen on a regular basis. I'll use a quick example. When I was a geology student and just learning about this, and this impressed me, and I've never forgotten it. I remember learning in geology about 50-year floodplains, 100-year floodplains, et cetera, and then watching on the news. It just happened to be. It was a horrible thing where all these houses and homes had been destroyed because of flooding, and the reporters there and saying, this hasn't happened for 100 years, as if it should never happen if it doesn't happen. And he was standing, and I just learned this as a geologist, right in the middle of a 100-year floodplain. It happened exactly on time from a nature's point of view. Yet humans don't, 100 years is a long time from a modern point of view. I think the ancients have a very, very different perspective. They could plan things. They could build things that they might not see the completion in their lifetime, yet they still knew it was important. They kept records over enormously long periods of time. They learned from those experiences. They looked at the sun and recorded things, et cetera. Much more sophisticated in that way than we are, I'd say.
Yeah, I recently started to take a look back at some of my family, the Italian part of my family, not the newly discovered Brazilian part of my family. And I just started to look, and I got fascinated again with Nero. And many people characterize Nero as a crazy guy, just crazy this, crazy that. But we're discovering new things about Nero. And I've often thought about, wait a minute. Why was it he built what he built? Did he have a sense of time? Did he think, I'm building it for me, that I'm never going to die? And I've thought about civilizations that just don't think like we think.
Right.
They look, they want to create this, how should I say it, this mark that you can build upon as if cultures will continue and will learn from each other. And I wanted to ask you this last question. I know this hour has gone very fast. First, how do people get a copy of this fabulous book? And also, how do they find out about you?
Okay, so find out about me. They can go to my website, which Catherine Ulysses Cady designed and maintains. I want to give her credit for that. It's Robert Schock, RobertSchoch.com. So RobertSchoch.com, and again, because people misspell my name all the time, RobertSchoch.com. And from there, there are links to the book, Forgotten Civilization, the second edition, the new edition. Or people want to have both editions, I think there's still... It's still available in the first edition, too. But the second edition is what people should be looking for. And there are links to Barnes & Noble and Amazon, et cetera, from my website. So I think that's the best way to think about that or to get up. And I would encourage people to not, and I want to be clear, I'm not trying to sell books here. I'm trying to disseminate information.
I mean, I want to be really clear, too. This is a book. However, it's way more than a book. And, you know, it is really, for me, somebody that doesn't know a whole lot but is absolutely fascinated, this truly does connect a lot of dots. And I think sometimes, Robert, that we live in a gap, right, where we used to be curious enough to want to connect the dots. But in this fast-paced world that we're in, and it is fast-paced because we don't even remember what we had for breakfast or whether we even had it, we are now, I think, starting to see a new fascination. And I wanted to ask you this question. I know I've got about 5 minutes left. Solar-induced dark age. If you think about this framework, what excites you most about your future journey and discoveries? You don't have to reveal any secrets, but I just want to get a sense.
Well, I'm on this journey. I'm continuing on this journey. I did not know where it would lead, and I still don't know ultimately where it will lead. But I think that something that's very important for me personally, and I believe that many people could benefit from this, is tying with what you were saying, not being so past-fate. I can't talk now. So fast-paced. We need to be able to sit back. We need to be able to reflect. We need to be able to think about things and integrate things. It should not always just be click, click here, there, and then jumping on to the next thing. I really think it's important to sit down and ponder and think about things. And I think this is something we can learn from the ancients also to really, for me, peace. And understanding the bigger picture, how things fit together. So part of my journey has always been, how do all the little pieces fit together? And I can't help but think of our physical, I just want to mention this if I may.
Sure.
Göbekli Tepe, this site in southeastern Turkey. It was devastated at the end of the last ice age. What we have there is a number of stone circles, they're called, and they have wonderful pillars that are beautifully carved, that have writing on them. People can read about this in the book. I believe it's true writing. They were literate, and you can see how they were snapped and broken during the end of the last ice age, during the devastating times, the earthquakes that would have been induced by the sun, and I talk about this again in the book without going into detail here, and they did their best to try to piece it together quickly and put up crude stone walls to hold it together and position everything the right way, because it records information. And then they covered it over purposefully. They spent a lot of time and energy covering it to protect it like a time capsule. So it was important to them to maintain it, to preserve it. Maybe they wanted to go back and uncover it. I don't know. But certainly I believe they thought it was important enough information to pass on to future generations. Again, they were not thinking in the short term. They were thinking beyond themselves. They were reflecting and thinking beyond their own lifetimes, beyond maybe even their own culture and civilization. To pass on a legacy. And I think that's so important, but so many people again, I come back to the theme that so many people today, I feel, in our society, they're encouraged to have a very short-term view of things, not in the bigger picture.
You know what I love about not just that story, but many stories like it? Here's what I love about it. Somehow they knew, even on the brink of what they saw as disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they wouldn't have gone through that trouble if they thought, oh, we're going to be okay.
Right.
Not really. But somehow they knew that humanity would survive. That sometime down the road, some way, somehow, this would be a discovery for the ages. And I've often thought about that. How did they know?
Yeah, how did they know? But it's how did they know, and also having that confidence.
Confidence, yes.
That yes, you do things for the long term.
Yep.
That there is something more important than, you know, any individual, if I could put it that way. Not that we're not all important in our own right, but having the confidence that there is a bigger picture and that we can collectively contribute to it.
Wow. Robert, thank you so much for today. Again, please give out your website. And last question, I'd like to know your personal message, what you'd like to leave us with today.
Personal message. Well, let's start with the website, www. I guess I don't need to say that. My students say I don't need to say that. Robert Schock, RobertSchoch. com. And maybe my personal message is that I think about Catherine, you'll see my wife, Katie and I always think about what we call the ancestors, those that came before us. And I think that we should try to do the ancestors proud, if I could put it that way, that we should do, we should acknowledge them, we should thank them for what they've given us, and that we should try to continue with the good precedents and legacy that they've set for us.
Mm. I want to thank you both. I mean, I want to thank you. And for those of you out there, just so you know, I want to make sure you get a copy of this book. I touched upon a few things in here. I did not get to Ezekiel's vision, but maybe I'll have to talk about that separately. Thank you so much, Robert. Thank you, Catherine, even though I know you're not on air here, but I know you're there. I want to thank all of you for tuning us in. And this is so interesting that I am sure you're going to want to know more about not just what Robert is talking about here, but what are the dots that are now being connected? And can you sit in awe? Let's take a short break, everyone. We'll be right back.
Imagine you are a ball of steel, smooth, small, and cool to the touch. Your life will soften you with fire. You will take hits that shape you. You will be forged into a powerful, purposeful work of art. Tune in to Forging a Life with Coach Christine Clark. Joining Dr. Papasili in a three-part series, Truths in the Creation of Katana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Christine Clark, a gifted, engaging speaker and trainer who has forged her life in the fires of self-employment, will take you on a journey to exploring the internal, mental, and emotional blocks that stand between us and a life of significance through an analogy of the process of crafting a traditional Japanese sword, or katana. For more information about Christine, visit sunglowtransformation.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
and good sunny Wednesday to you. And Lazarus here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Still on 405 northbound, just after the 167 interchange in Talbot Road South. Heavy through to about the 169, but smooth up through the Canedale Hill. In the opposite direction, 405 southbound, just after the I-90. It's slow and moderate to about 112th Avenue Southeast, rolling into the S-curve. Again, that's 405 southbound. Everywhere else, traffic's actually looking pretty good. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network and the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By. And is your anxiety lying to you? We'll have special guest Amanda Huggins to explain it all. Coming up next.
NBC Radio, I'm Tom Roberts. The Brooklyn Center, Minnesota police officer who resigned after shooting and killing Dante Wright at a traffic stop is under arrest. NBC's Morgan Chesky says Kim Potter will face a second-degree manslaughter charge.
This is a charge that we anticipated coming at some point today. It's important to note that you could be charged with second-degree manslaughter if you knowingly or consciously take a risk that results in the death of a person.
Potter possibly meant to fire a taser, but pulled out a gun and fired a deadly shot at the unarmed black man. A forensic pathologist says George Floyd's heart disease and drug use were the main causes of his death. Defense witness Dr. David Fowler says Floyd died of a sudden abnormal heart rate due to his underlying heart disease and drug use during his struggle with police. President Biden is expected later this hour to announce plans to fully withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Biden argues it's time for American troops to come home, but critics argue it's too abrupt and dangerous to take such action. Correspondent Kristen Welker says the White House counters there will still be a U.S. presence in Afghanistan.
There will be a small footprint, an intelligence footprint, and otherwise to try to keep the peace while a broader diplomatic deal is reached, which is something they hope happens in the months and years ahead.
Some 3,000 troops should return home by September 11th. The former New York investment banker responsible for the largest investment fraud in U.S. history is dead. Bernie Madoff was 82. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has no kind words for Madoff.
A very sad episode in the history of this city, and a lot of people, unfortunately, were hurt. So the day someone passes is not a time to dance on a grave, but let's just be honest. Many, many people were hurt by his actions.
Madoff was sentenced to 150 years in federal prison. European Union regulators say the benefits of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine outweigh any risks. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
Need a break from the sound bites and the talking heads? Do you want information you can actually use? Information that'll change your life for the better? Then listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del will show you how to retire in 2 to 5 years. Your age doesn't matter. Turn off the pundits and turn on the passive income. Tune in to the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon, right here on KKNW.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, another gorgeous and sunny day we have in store for us. High temperatures around 62, 63 degrees today. Clear skies and temperatures dropping down about 20 degrees down to about 43 for tonight. Clear skies through the overnight. More sunshine expected for Thursday. High temperatures topping out in the high 60s, 68, 69 in many areas. Thursday night again clear with temperatures dropping down to about 46. Oh, look at that. Friday, more sunshine again and highs of around 74. I'm loving these last few days.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show. It's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. And, you know, one of the things I love is I love to really be able to go from one show where we're talking about,
you know, ancient hieroglyphics and information and just fascination about how so much knowledge has been preserved for us by civilizations that didn't even know or maybe didn't know that humanity would still exist, that they would get through the Ice Age. And so yet here we are, and we talk about that. And I was really struck by getting ready to talk to Amanda Huggins today and talking about anxiety, because if you connect the dots from some ancient civilizations that knew that their time would be up but yet felt so in tune to preserve what they'd learned, and you bring us to where we are today, and text message I get on my phone, you know, that keeps me informed of things that are going on in the world. And then you get a text message that says, we are now at the highest homeless rate that we have ever been at. And I can't remember, it was either 5.6 nationally. And then you look at different places, like, for example, Colorado. And many of us would be like, we think in the Pacific Northwest, we're like, we think we're number one, but we're actually may not be. And there are so many other places. But then you think about a new study that then says Colorado, and we never think of Colorado as in the top 10 or top 15 of places. And then you start to think, how, what is underneath this? How do we wrap ourselves around providing solutions for people? Minnesota, you never think Minnesota is going to be 16th for homelessness in 2021. I didn't. You know, maybe because I lived on the East Coast and now I'm on the West Coast, and you're thinking to yourself, if you are going to be homeless, probably California or Hawaii. But then you start to see the landscape of what seems to be happening. And if you are Amanda, you take on the tough conversations and you help people as a respected anxiety and mindfulness coach, certified yoga instructor, which we're going to talk about today too, writer, keynote speaker, somebody that has been out there to set open this space that is usually stems from each and every one of us, our own personal journey, and then comes forward to say, wait a minute, what have we learned about anxiety and what is the truth about it? Today, is your anxiety lying to you? And my very, very special guest, Amanda Huggins. Amanda, great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Pat. I'm so excited to be here.
You know, I think every one of us that shows up in this space has a story of some kind or a direction of some kind. And it usually, and I tell my story many times on how my personal and family, history and patterns, you know, got me interested in understanding the human psyche. I mean, if it wasn't for growing up in that family, I probably wouldn't be here today. But I have to know, you know, I just briefly talked about a little bit about what you, I would love to know what touched your heart, what challenges, what obstacles showed up for you that you had to overcome to, like, bring you now here to this very moment.
Yeah, you know, I like that question, and it's not so simple as one specific thing that happened. And I think that's the case for many people who are struggling with, whether it's anxiety or depression or any combination of mental health struggles, is it's often a series of small events that we allow to snowball. And if I have to pinpoint a particular period of time in my journey, I would say from the outside, it was a period of time that looked quite normal. I was in my early to mid-20s. It looked like I was happy, well-traveled, good job. And that actually created the biggest disconnect of all, because on the inside, I was absolutely crumbling. There were a slew of body dysmorphia issues that I was working through, eating disorders. I was masking deep
an enormous depression in a job that I hated. I was in an abusive relationship. And so it really was this perfect storm. And there were quite a few different points in time. I lovingly joke around with myself and say I had a couple of rock bottoms that I'm gratefully past. But it was really in those moments where I had to step outside of myself and say, okay, you know that this isn't all that life has to offer. You know that this isn't core you. How do we get back to that person? Or how do we maybe not get back to her? How do we find her to begin with?
Yeah. And, you know, I love the way that you answered that question. And it's been a question I've been asking 17 years because when I first started doing this, I was at another bottom again. And this was a gift that the universe had show up for me. But the reason I'm asking that question is because I really feel that people want to know they're not alone now. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That you and I are just not on here talking about stuff we have no experience with. And yet at the same time, anxiety could be both seductive and elusive.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this lion, can't curse on air, lion you know what called anxiety?
Yes, and I can fill in the blanks in my own mind there.
Then he's got his hand on the
button. Thank you very much, ladies. I appreciate that.
Ready to fire. I'll start here.
Yeah.
I think that anxiety, especially right now, we're socially, environmentally, we're just in such a strange time with anxiety. One of the things that you mentioned, the word seductive, which is why I go here first, is we actually see anxiety depicted in the media, whether it's in memes on social media or quirky characters with anxiety. We see it almost as this thing like, oh, it's super normal. Don't worry about it.
Right.
And that's a half truth in the sense that it is absolutely normal. And I don't want people to worry about it. But I also think that there's a certain level of conditioning where we're all okay with sweeping it under the rug. And that's a dangerous place to be. And I certainly found myself there where I'm like, well, if everyone's feeling like this, I guess this is just what it is to be an adult, at least an adult in America. And this is where it becomes elusive, is anxiety is really an umbrella term, or at least that's the way I like to look at it. Because once we move past understanding and working through the physical symptoms, well, then we have to unpack the root, whether that is guilt, grief, shame, fear, limiting beliefs. There's so much that is connected to anxiety, and that's actually what we want to go into. That's also the harder work, which is why most of us like to avoid it. I avoided it for years.
You know, it's fascinating. I want to give you a real-life example because I think this really does talk to what you're saying, because we're going to really take a deeper dive into this. And it has to do with what you talk about when you say truth and story. And there are a couple of other there are other patterns and words that we use. I'm moving my home, and so I've been in this great place with, you know, close to friends for 14 years, right? But life changes, things change, people rearrange their priorities, and sometimes you have to make a change. And in my case, you know, where I'm living is going to be used for something else. So I made this statement, hey, I'm moving. Could use some help. Going to do it in two parts. That was the end of my thought. I'm moving. I need help with the boxes, people. Mm-hmm. The moving truck.
Yeah.
That was the end. But then there came a story, not by me. Oh, my gosh, you're really moving. What is it like? You've been there for 14 years. You know, were you moving far? How's that going to feel? And I'm like, my head's going to explode right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enough to me. You can't see it because they're over there, a wall full of boxes, right? You can only see the fireplace back here. But for me, it's like I'm moving and I need help. I think we have become very susceptible to story. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And you actually opened up a conversation about another layer of story, which is once we have an anxious thought or have the truth, when we share that with other people or we engage with other people, that can fuel more stories and more triggers. When we look at the individual experience, I always use this I like to use myself as an example. It's never to like talk about myself so much as it's to just demonstrate really clearly. And I worked in technology for a really long time, and I worked at a startup. We were not a super successful startup, and my boss walked in one morning, dear friend, and he did not say hi to me. So in that moment, the truth was simply he didn't say hi to me. The story I immediately jumped to was I'm getting fired. And what's interesting about that is if I chose to, and I did in that moment, there were a ton of environmental cues that could validate that story. We were not doing well. I knew that there were cuts on the team. So story can also become very elusive, because if you want to find validation for it, you will. And I also think it's really interesting. I don't know how intentional this was on your part, but even when you opened up today's episode with a reference to a previous conversation about like hieroglyphs and just ancient behaviors, anxiety and really this idea of story, of looking for the negative, that is actually an ancient behavior. That was self-preservation for us at that point. Now it's all psychosocial and we're quote unquote dropping into self-preservation, but really we're just looking for problems for ourselves.
You know, we're going to talk about this when we come back, because I was talking with Dr. Robert Schoch. I mean, the world's most, you know, leading on sun and the sun itself. And we were talking about exactly this, but not the way you framed it. That was brilliant, the way you framed it. I wish I would have talked to you first, then I would talk to him. But there was had to be a level of anxiety in ancient civilizations. And let me call it is there such a thing as healthy anxiety? I don't know. I want
Absolutely.
You to talk about this.
Absolutely.
But there had to be a sense of that, because they knew the Ice Age was coming. So here's what they did. To Göbekli Tepe, what they did is they built the container, they built it underground, they built the circles, then they built a layer on it, then they built another layer, then they covered it up to preserve it for a civilization that they weren't sure was going to exist.
Brilliant.
That's kind of like a healthy thing, I think.
Absolutely. So
right?
The root of, one of the roots, and it depends if you want to look at this more energetically, spiritually, or physically, but if we look physically for a second, anxiety, the human experience of it, is rooted in our fight or flight response. Fight or flight is a key component of self-preservation. It's instinctual. So that civilization that you're talking about, to a certain degree, that was an instinct. And when you think about like any core species, all of our instincts are preserve our species, self-preservation, safety. I do think that's a healthy level of anxiety. And in modern day, we can have healthy expressions of anxiety. That is when our anxiety is telling us something that we need to look at and grow from. The shift is we don't need the intensity and the duration to be as extreme as so many of us allow it to be.
Yeah. And by the way, what happens with the headline that I just gave about homelessness? You and I are going to talk about that when we come back. What happens when I get 10 text messages about something that is important to me, because I was homeless at 17, so it's important to me. It's in my DNA to really do something about that, although I don't always know every day what to do. But why is it important to talk about it? And is there a place you go with a story that takes you to the dark side? Even the sun has a dark side. When we come back, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to turn that right over to my very special guest, Amanda Huggins, everybody, when we come back, talking about anxiety, talking about patterns, and talking about what you can do. Does the truth, and we are taking your calls, 1-800-930-2819. We'll be right back, Benny.
Welcome to Light Body Wisdom with internationally known Light Body Whisperer, Grace Holm. She will make you laugh and yawn as you release lifetimes of trauma and begin to feel much lighter. Your divine gifts may be activated, allowing you to weave light into the fabric of the world. Are you ready to be your own light and shine? For more information about Grace, visit GraceGHolm.com. That's Grace, G
GHOM.com. Take the power of essential oil healing to the next level with the Essential Light Insight Deck, containing 61 oracle cards. Each card holds a painting and message that captures the spirit of an essential oil. By drawing a card, you'll illuminate the spiritual healing capacity of plants and transform your day. For more information about the Essential Light Insight Deck and Gen Ripa, visit Thriveology.com.
Hi, I'm Brittany Miles from Miles to Go, How to Lose to Gain It All. I have a mindfulness practice to help you face difficult emotions. It's called RAIN. Developed by Tara Brock, the letters mean the following. R, recognize what's happening to you. A, allow the situation to be as it is. I, investigate feelings with interest and care. And nurture yourself with self-compassion. So you see, RAIN isn't so bad after all. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the 2nd and 4th Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at miles2gocoaching.com. That's miles, the number 2, gocoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss, every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Are you ready to let go of the I can't that are holding you down? Valerie Trujillo invites you to join her community on a mission to collectively heal as a tribe, where your vulnerability is heard and reciprocated. So tune in to Love and Light with the Crystal Blue Oracle every 2nd and 4th Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Valerie and her work, visit CrystalBlueOracle.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Look, we are taking your questions today and comments today because, you know, whenever we do a show like this, especially with Amanda, you know, it is not a show for just she and I to be talking about a bunch of things. If there is something heavy on your mind, if there is something that maybe you want to weigh in on, whatever that is, you know, and you've known this for 17 years, my phone line is always open on the show. And if you don't want to come on air, give Benny your question or Jacob on Facebook, 1-800-930-2819. Amanda, before we roll again, I want to make sure people, one, know how to find out more about you, two, how they could work with you, because you're an anxiety mindfulness coach and much more. So give people that information. I want to make sure we mention that a bunch of times.
Thank you. Yeah, my website is pretty easy to remember. It's AmandaHugginsCoaching.com, so first name, last name, and whatido.com. That's where you'll find any information about programs, working with me, and right now I'm offering a free grounding meditation. So you'll sign up with a pop-up. We'll email that to you, and that's all yours to enjoy.
Thank you so much for all that you do. I know that we're adding a little humor to this because, honestly, when I think about some of my life and my life history, some of this is just so hysterical.
You have to laugh.
Yeah. It's hysterical, and it's comedic. I mean, I think about the many times I came close to not being on this earth. I mean, I do. And it wasn't until maybe 10 years ago did the light bulb go on where the dots got connected for me, where I thought, we've got to help other people. Maybe not everybody's homeless, but maybe you have addiction in your family. Maybe there's a conversation I can have with you. Maybe you want to be a successful business person, have a great corporate career. Maybe we can help you with that.
that's what you're doing here. You know, my sense of you is you're here to not have people go through 30 years like I went through for the light bulb to go on. What do you think the greatest challenges are from so far for you and what you've discovered with anxiety? What are the greatest challenges and what are the greatest observations that you've made?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, let's start with the humorous lens for a second.
I
joke with myself and my clients is anytime something tough or difficult happens, even now, I'm like, I got to have the lesson first before I teach people how to work through it, which is a blessing and a curse. And sometimes I look up at the universe and I'm like, can I not be the punching bag for a day? But, you know, it's not so much a punching bag. I use that term pretty lightly. In terms of greatest observations, it's not that, I think there can be a lot of cynicism in the world, and it's very easy to look out with a lens of judgment and say, oh, that person's not helping themselves, or that person's rolling in their victim mindset, or we can place judgment and blame however we want. From the thousands of people that I have talked to and worked with at this point, it is not that most people don't want to feel better. They don't want to help themselves. It's that most people don't know how yet. And that's why talking about anxiety and sharing how you can work through it is so near and dear to my heart, is there are tools available. There are things that we can do, and there's really deep insights that we can glean from the anxious experiences we're having. But we've got to talk about it, and we've got to bring those tools to a greater awareness, really. So I think that's probably the biggest insight. And then as you and I were talking about off air, everything is workable. And our life experience, whether good, bad, or neutral, it was given to us for a reason. And so as we work through our anxiety, we also have the opportunity to move closer towards our purpose, whatever that might be.
You know, that leads me to a question for you, and I know it's been a journey for us, and we're going through it right now. And, you know, there used to be a conversation called truth or dare, and now you talk about truth and story.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you about when truth and anxiety are the same. Meaning, is there a point where when anxiety shows that up, it's also true? Does that make sense, that question?
That makes perfect sense. Okay. And we're in a time right now where that question comes up quite often. When we look around right now, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, so there's a lot of health-related anxiety or just general fear about the state of the world. And you can look out and say, yes, we're in interesting, or as much as I hate this term at this point, unprecedented times, insert the biggest eye roll in the world, there is truth to that. So then it becomes a question of inner control, and then if there's action that we can take. So when you cannot control external environments that are eliciting anxiety, you've got to look inward and say, okay, how much of my emotional, spiritual, physical state can I control, support, and really nurture and love? And then if there is action that I can take that will help me, and you had mentioned homelessness, and we were also talking about this off air. I think that's an excellent example of this.
Yeah.
Will you independently solve homelessness across the entire country? I wish, right? But this is going to be a team effort here.
No. I think so.
We can look at those anxious calls, and there's at least two clear opportunities there. One is when we have this direct connection to something causing us anxiety, we can look in and ask that question, do I as a spirit require deeper healing here? And then if this is something that is community-based, is there anything that I have to offer? And it doesn't have to be financial support. It can be, can I show up to you know, a neighborhood cleanup? I'm using that as an example, but it's just something tactical that I can do. When we drop ourselves into service, we're raising our frequency, we are raising our vibration, and we are in support of other people. That is not going to be a cure for the big anxiety things, that it brings us into a state where we can enact change, and that's what's important.
Yeah. I want to give you a real-life example because I've got you here. And
please.
It seems like the most benign example to give. I'm in media. Benny, we are on an AM-FM station here, plus you're on the Transformation Network, is the network that I founded 11 years ago. You're also on the Dr. Pat Show. We're on like 100 different places. I don't even know where. And I've been doing this, my show, for 17 years. I've never really, except for the cussing part, which Benny reminds me of, like, because we are on an FCC deal here, I've never really had to worry about stuff I said. I mean, I've talked about the many faces of Lyme disease. I was a Lyme disease advocate way before people were talking about it. I talked about the fact that it's called the Great Imposter. If I were to do that show today, given the new guidelines now on social media and on video producing, live streaming video channels, they would send me a warning about medical misinformation. And I have never felt anxious about my voice. And it's not just me, because what's happening with this is really interesting. It's creating a ripple effect. We have hosts, we have callers that call into the show. They express their opinion. And it's as if we're being watched and monitored. And here's the irony of it all. My AM/FM station just sent a memo out saying, read the guidelines, you can't say this, you can't say this. And it's especially around the vaccine. And I don't have an opinion for anyone other than myself about the vaccine. That's not what I do. But it was interesting. One of our shows got flagged for a conversation about it. Only for the next day, the headlines about that particular vaccine saying we're going to pull it from the market. And so there is an anxiety around speaking truth. And I'm giving you a major impact. But in our everyday language with each other, we are not sure, do I say this at work? Do I say it to my mom? Do I not? And I got to ask you about this. This is a new kind of anxiety I'm sensing in our country. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. Yeah, everything that you said, now I'm a little hesitant to even speak to the vaccine because
I don't want to talk to the vaccine. Oh, my gosh.
I'm not going to get you kicked off air.
Please, folks that you're monitoring this show, we are not talking about the vaccine.
We are not talking about it.
Just saying. We ain't talking about it. We don't have an opinion today.
Correct. Yeah, I echo that in understanding. I can certainly speak to the internet and social media, and it seems like every day there is someone new getting the term is canceled, which just means all day. Yeah, don't love it. Some people rightfully so, but then others, you know, they make a comment or share an opinion, and all of a sudden they are perhaps not banned from the internet, but reputations pulled down and, you know, getting messaged really horrible things. And there is a rising censorship that's happening. And I like anything, there is a light and dark and a good and bad. I think
absolutely
there are degrees of monitoring and gut checking with people to say, hey, is what you're sharing in the best and highest good? But what's happening is, you know, the pendulum has swung so far in one direction that for those of us, perhaps you and I, who what we talk about is quite normal to us, but it might be fringe for people. I think specifically within our world, there is a little bit of hesitancy or anxiety sometimes because you know that there is going to be contrasting opinions reflected back towards you. And
yeah.
That, you know, if that resonates with anyone listening, I would just say, when you are in your truth and when you are in authenticity, and I'm going to use that phrase again, highest and best good, when you are sharing from that place and the anxiety comes up, drop a little deeper into your spirit.
Yeah.
I am doing this for the good.
Yeah.
And if you can't drop into that alignment, maybe then you gut check yourself to say, okay, do I believe in what I'm sharing?
Yeah.
But that's the kind of anxiety I think it can mirror an opportunity for us to really come to a deeper resolve with what we believe.
And the reason I brought it up is because it leads me to the next point I want to talk to you about. And there is a connect the dots moment here. I happen to find it in almost every, I'm afraid to even mention the V word. That used to be vagina, but it's different now. Benny, are you going to bleep me for that?
Why? It's a medical term. That's what we're supposed to be using.
Yes,
we are quite
that's
often.
A medical
that's
term.
That's what I'm here
it
for.
It is. But it's, I don't even want to mention it. And what I'm finding is it's not just on air. And again, you're right. I am soul searching, this kid, protester, you know, Stonewall kid. I am just looking at me and saying, what's going on inside of there? And yet, what I'm picking up on for you to talk about is this strange bedfellow that hops into bed with anxiety, and it starts with an F. It's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And when does anxiety, like we're talking about, what happens if my family asks me at Thanksgiving dinner if I've gotten the V?
Mm-hmm.
Do I tell them the truth? Do I not tell them the truth? And what I'm trying to say is, what happens when fear and anxiety get together? What is the impact of that? And how much does mindset either take us down the spiral or help us keep sane? I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, that and much more. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie,
and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossed-over loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences, one-on-one coaching, to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, CourageToBeSeen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. Out of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232. Thank you.
everybody, welcome back. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. We are talking today about, and you know, is your anxiety lying to you? And we have a couple of things we've already talked about where we pointed out maybe not. My very special guest, Amanda Huggins, joining me here today. Amanda, one more time, how do people find out about you? How do they connect with you? How do they work with you?
Everything is on my website. It is AmandaHugginsCoaching.com. So first name, last name, and then what I do. And when you visit my website, we will email you a free 10-minute meditation on the root chakra, which is arguably my favorite chakra to work with.
Oh, boy. You don't get, get the root rolling, you just ain't going to get rolling. Thank you, and thank you for joining us here today. During a break, I was talking about a line that sometimes in my life I know I've crossed, and I think our listeners can relate to this. I'm like you. I don't like to always talk about myself, but I got a couple of emails a number of years back from listeners that are like, We don't know what you're saying. Did you go through this in life? Did you have that life experience? And so I started to talk more about it. But there's this interesting dynamic that you address, and it is the relationship between fear and anxiety. And I was talking to you about during break about a situation. If I'd handled that situation differently, I'd have gone down a rabbit hole. And I'm not sure if fear would have blown anxiety. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I would like you to talk about the relationship, but also what we can do to check it, right?
Yeah. So you've probably heard this or used this phrase yourself, which is everything in the universe can be divided into either fear or love. And I really love that. It's a little binary. I think there's other things afloat too, but when we choose to look at it like that, our anxiety kind of brings this message to us. So I'm going to use a personal example, and it'll be fairly benign, but when I was in this state of really deep body dysmorphia and living in LA, you kind of get fed a perfect picture of what you quote-unquote should like, and it's just unbelievably toxic. And my anxiety, that was one of the places in which it was speaking to me. I went down the fully leaning into the fear of it, I would have continued to perpetuate the dysmorphia, a lot of my negative and avoidance-based behaviors. And I did for a little while, but, and this is the beautiful thing about the human spirit is, I don't believe that we can live in fear for all that long. I think we can roll around in it for sure, but at some point we kind of get sick and tired of it, and that's that opportunity to choose love or self-love. And that's when we start tuning back inward and dropping into nurturing practices. Now, this is an example that is inner, right? That was me with me. So what about when it's situational? You had brought up like having a fear-based conversation with your parents or maybe a coworker. That's a really interesting example, because once we start sharing, there's a conversation we're anxious about and we have to share that with someone else. We're going to start dropping into stories about how they might receive it. We're going to potentially drop into story about our own worth and our own value in our voice. That is all fear. But we can use that as an opportunity to look around the corner and say, well, how could this also be love-based? What could this conversation look like if I stay really true to myself? What do I need to do to take care of myself so that I can show up for this conversation? A lot of that, when we're talking about within the person, it's nurturing, it's deep breathing, it's dropping into an understanding of what your truths are and then reconnecting with them.
And, you know, I want to talk about this for a minute, because there's a level of, and maybe you can address this very specifically. I call it like a little electrical shock that I get, right? You know, you ever been like, I don't know, like friction on the rug, and you go like, oh, and then you touch somebody, it's like, oh, and then it's like there and it's gone. And so there are things in my life that I know do that for me. I don't stay with them, but they're important to me. One of them is rights for people's rights. My stepmom groomed us like that. We marched on places that I never even understood why we marched. And I always wondered, my stepmom, blonde, beautiful, young stepmom, my dad was like 30 years older, beautiful, puffing the cigarette, walking down the street, and we were the only white people in that group. And never really thought about that way. And I look back. Homeless. So when I read a statistic, I don't go down the pathway, but I ask myself, could I be doing more? How do we value the knowledge we get from what I call those little tinges, right? The little electric shock that I feel it hits me in my heart. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just gets me in my heart. Now, there are some that get me in my heart and they just don't leave. And I got to be like, God, you got to help me with this one because this is like killing me. But are those moments to move us forward for a purpose greater than ourselves?
Absolutely. And it becomes very nuanced, too. You said, I might butcher the exact phrasing of what you just said, but you spoke indirectly to this question of enoughness. Am I doing enough? Am I showing up enough? That is where I think it gets really nuanced is we have to look at our enoughness as inherent and intrinsic. And most of the time when we're in a state of anxiety, we're viewing our enoughness as below the line. So if we want to show up to a cause or show up to our community and we're in that state of anxiety, we're always going to be locked in that because if I'm not enough, I'm never going to do enough. So the work is actually a step before that is to separate from anything else going on in the world to build up this, and this is, I wish it was a light bulb thing, it was just a quick switch and we're there, but to build that enoughness so that when you are presented with opportunities in which you can show up to community or show up to support and move towards purpose, you're doing it from a grounded place where you're not going to question your efforts. So in other words, your cup is full and you can actually pour from it instead of half-empty cup, and you're like, where's my water going to come from? How am I going to pour into this community now?
Right. Yeah. Like the food bank doesn't have any food for infants. Okay, get out your checkbook.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is really, I want to ask you about this in the time we have left. We're talking about this because it represents a large community of people right now that are maybe not completely here, but over. How do we know it? We know it. Let's go to statistics. We know it by the alcohol online purchase rate. We know it by the percentage of online snacks that are now being bought. I mean, there's just so many indicators that we have a sense of it.
Online shopping.
Online shopping. So we have a sense of this, right? Online gambling. I mean, we could go on about it. So we have a sense of it. The question now is that you and I are having this conversation because we want to help people with this, not because we just want to talk about it. What have you found some of the solutions in the work that you do, some of the things you've been able to help people with by doing different things or by learning different things? What have you learned?
So at a high level, the biggest learning is probably the most uncomfortable, which is understanding and then learning to work with your anxiety is not necessarily an easy path because often it means that you need to process trauma and you need to learn how to move out of avoidance, all of those things that you just mentioned. So to get a little bit deeper, how do you actually do that and how do you start moving out of avoidance? You've got to seek help first, and that means clearing the ego. That help may be in the form of a therapist or a coach or a group program, but any dynamic where you're able to share without judgment is hyper important because we're in so much avoidance that we're barely admitting things to ourselves. So you've got to get over that uncomfortable barrier and start sharing, period. And then from there, it's the oldest trick in the book, but you've got to start journaling and not just your diary, this is what I'm doing today, but the type of questions that, which I love, I still support doing that, but questions that allow you to go a little bit deeper into the unconscious. Where does this come from? What can I do next? If there were no limits on who I can be, what would that person look like? Like, have fun with it, but also don't lose the depth.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it really does enable us to really have that conversation with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And boy, the relief in that. you know, and especially in, I mean, I work with a number of coaches because I have to have a sounding board.
Yeah.
You know, I have to be able to say, you know, from a business perspective, this is what I think. And then I hop over to a spiritual perspective and I say, what do you think? And they say, give that to God. And okay, really? And yeah, really. And, you know, this is part of what you do is help people understand that we are so much more. You know, Matt James, a friend of mine, said to me many years ago, Pat, whatever you think you are, you're more than that. And he said to everybody listening, whatever you think you are, everybody, this is his phrase, whatever you think you are, you're more than that. And he never forgot that. He didn't say you're X amount more or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just love that because it gives us a sense that we are so resilient, even when we think we're not. But we do need to learn some new tools, don't we?
We absolutely do. Neural reprogramming is really one of the, and I'm a big fan of spiritual and scientific and the blend between them.
Yeah,
and
me too.
This is where neural reprogramming is like the sweet spot because you have the data to show you can absolutely rewire your brain, and it lends itself to, well, you've also got to connect with your higher self. You've also got to see your enoughness and start to give yourself permission to envision who you want to become. And that, even if we took anxiety as a title out of this conversation, that is the gist of quote-unquote anxiety management. It is retraining your brain into not fake believing or fake understanding, into knowing your enoughness and then creating life from that point. That's where you can show up to other people. That's where you show up to yourself the best. But you've got to believe it first.
Yeah. You know, this is an important body of work. I mean, and I want to just honor you on that pathway because many of us, you know, when we wake up every day, we don't stop and say, oh, how did I get here? How did I sign up for this? You know, I know from my life experiences that in my meditation, I say, God, what is mine to do today? And then I do it. Sometimes it's pack a box because I'm moving. Sometimes it's have a great conversation with Amanda Huggins. Go ahead and do that. Sometimes it's make sure you lean into what your listeners really need help with, if you could know that.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we are divinely guided. How do we best hone in that now? Because I think that is the most powerful tool we have.
It absolutely is. I start my day with three questions, and this is not like a, you don't need your journal. You just need your eyes open or closed. It doesn't matter.
Right.
How do I feel in this moment? What does my mind think I need to do? And then what is my spirit asking of me today? And it's important to look at what the mind, often the ego, is that I have to do my to-do list and I have to do this and that. And to open up the dialogue first within your spirit, and then that conversation opens it up to that larger question, how can I be guided today? And there's also just got to be, especially I know for myself, I was like, you know, younger in my journey, oh, that stuff's not real.
No,
it is. And I think for anyone, regardless of where you may be at in your journey, there's nothing wrong with self-reflection, to look back at the incredible things that have happened and use them as confirmation or reminders that you've been guided even in those really difficult moments that you were still being looked after. And so if that's been true up until now, why wouldn't it be true today forward? And that's what you lean into is, well, it's always been here. It's going to be here tomorrow. And then you nurture it.
And you get the message whatever way you get it. You get the pathway whatever way you get it. What you just shared is going to touch somebody. I got an email from a listener, it had to be a bunch of years ago, when I shared the story of, I was interviewed and asked, what was a pivotal moment in my life? When did a light bulb go on? And, you know, there have been many. And I think I probably wouldn't answer the question the same way. But at that time, I said, you know what it was? It's when I had a 69 Firebird, brand new, 1 month old. and I was angry driving down Route 22. I had somebody in the car who I was angry at, and for whatever reason, a car cut me off, and I hit a telephone pole, and the car door on my side bent out, and the cop said to me, if that door would have been hit 1/2 inch the other direction, everybody would be dead. And, you know, that something about that and my relationship with anger changed from that point on. Now, I got to tell you, it wasn't overnight. I had a whole lot. But we have to look for these moments where we believe in ourselves and we recognize that there isn't any emotion that is out there that would cause us to hit a telephone pole that would be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of years trying to find one.
Yep.
I want to thank you for today. Tell folks again how they can work with you. Tell them a bit about some of the videos that you offer as well. Those are kind of cool. What's the best way for people to contact you?
Yeah, so the best way to find me is on my website. It's AmandaHugginsCoaching.com. You'll get information about direct one-on-one coaching, a couple of group programs, and then when you sign up for my email list, you'll get a free root chakra meditation. It's only about 10 minutes. I'm partial, but I'm a big fan of it. It's a nice way to wake up.
It is a nice way to wake up because, you know, why not wake up with Amanda? One last question for you. I want to know what your personal message is. You know, we've talked about a lot of things today, a lot of wonderful messages and what you brought forward. A new way for us to really build a relationship with both our anxiety and our fear, and also with ourselves. And I'd love to know what your personal message is, what you'd like to leave us with today.
So you can change the way that your life looks by changing the way that your mind works, and that requires curiosity, grace, compassion, and deep listening. But regardless of what emotional state you find yourself in, whether it is anxiety or, like you just mentioned, this holy anger is what I like to look at anger as, there's messages. And as dark or as dire as it might feel in that moment, it is a message for your growth, and it's a message of love. So do not lean into the fear. Lean back into yourself.
Awesome. Please give out your website one more time.
AmandaHugginsCoaching.com.
You know, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Thank you for not only, you know, you bringing forward your personal messages and sharing the depth of what your experience is, but also for being there for people in a time that people don't even know that they need help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a sense of it, Amanda, but this is where you're bringing your message out to them. And I so appreciate you. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pat. It was a pleasure.
Amanda Huggins, everybody, lots of information on our website, lots of information for us to learn from, but also for things for us to do. You know, we're living in a world where energy is passing through us day and night. And what if you could learn a few things that Amanda just shared today in the show? What if there was a nugget that you heard today that would just help you hit the pause button? Just do that. Thank you all. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you all for tuning us in and turning us on. Kudos to Benny. I don't know how many times you may have had to hit that button today, but I think we're pretty good. Thank you for Jacob for all that you're doing. And remember, everyone, that we can get deeply into the truth and change our lives. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the hosts of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk.